What I wanted to visit with you today about is a little bit about the journey we've taken on our ranch over the last 4 or 5 years to figure out how to increase profitability. A little bit about us might be typical to a lot of places you might see, or a family operation running commercial black Angus cows. We also farm quite a bit of ground in the north central part of South Dakota. There's where we're at, near Falkton. And we just went through our whole generational transfer in our family. My two cousins and I that I grew up with, we took over management from my dad and my uncle starting January 1st of 2012. Took us a couple years to get to that point, and we finally got that done. And so we're fifth generation in our family on that place, and pretty proud of that a little bit. But as we took over in 2012, it actually gave us a really great opportunity to kind of reevaluate everything that had been going on, and gave us a chance to kind of start asking the question of why. Why have we been doing the things we're doing? What were our old goals? What are our new goals? And really, the old goals are pretty simple. We were just trying to grow big calves, right? Grow some bigger calves, get a little bigger check when we sell them. Kept back the biggest replacement heifers every year, and just kind of rolled that through, marketed them once a year. We would background those calves after weaning and then market them as feeders, usually in the winter, February time period. But when we took over, we decided we were trying to figure out how do we maybe increase our profitability, and be a good time to look at those. So we came up with a list of a lot of different goals that we wanted to start looking at. But the big one was, how do we increase the value of our cattle? Taking over in 2012, we've talked about that year quite a bit with the drought. You know, it was a challenge. We had high corn prices. We had high land prices around us. And initially, when you take over and you're really, really ready to take off, you think, man, we should get bigger. We should expand. We should do all this stuff. And that really wasn't a good option for us. There was no way we could afford to do that at that point. And so we kind of took a little bit different approach. We decided, instead of getting bigger, let's figure out how to get better. And that's really what we took off on that year. We were on a reduced number of cows already because of that drought. We started the year off with fewer cows, but it kind of gave us a nice platform to launch. So one of the things we want to do is kind of benchmark genetically where we were at with our cattle that first year. So we were going to basically take the last of my dad's calf crop. We were going to retain ownership on those cattle for the very first time, just see where we were at, so we kind of knew where we were starting from. But like we talked about, corn was going to be $8 down in the feedlot that year. And I didn't think it was going to be a very good thing on my resume to show that I was a full-time managing partner for 1 year, right? So let's not go broke the first year. Let's see if we can make this last a little bit longer. So we kind of lost that first year. But we did decide we were going to start doing a few things different. We decided to make the commitment to artificially inseminate our entire cow herd. Up to that point, we had just been doing the heifers every year. But that was sort of limiting, obviously, our ability to make some big genetic changes. But what we were looking at was, you know, you look at the market every day, and every day that beef market tells us that they will pay us more money for cattle at grade prime, for cattle at grade CAB. Every day. And so we said, you know what, let's try and make cattle at grade, and let's take their money if they want to give it to us. And so as we're looking at the AI sires we wanted to use, we started focusing on those cattle that were going to perform better for us when it came to grading. And that's what we're really looking at. Also wanted to start reducing our cow herd size, or cow size, mature cow size. That first year drought obviously really helped emphasize how important that can be in your operation too. So we took off, and we kind of got over that first big hurdle of getting all the cows AI'd that first time, for the first time. And we were using cleanup bulls that we were producing ourselves, that were coming out of a kind of a herd within our herd that we keep. There were some registered cows, purebred cows, Angus. And so we kind of knew those pedigrees, but we didn't necessarily know a lot about those bulls other than, you know, what they should be doing according to the numbers. So when we finally got that very first calf crop, we were pretty excited. We finally had a significant number of AI calves that we thought could probably perform a little bit better in the feedlot, and we found a feedlot that we were excited to start working with. They're going to custom feed down at Ersick and Dahl's yard down by Garden City, Kansas. And we kind of hedged our bet that first year. We retained ownership for the very first time, but only on the AI sired calves because we felt like they were a little bit more of a known quantity. And then we took our cleanup calves and we marketed them in the traditional way of selling them at the sale barn as weaned backgrounded feeder calves. And then we retained all of our AI heifers, and that was kind of our first step. So we finally, right, we started in 2012. Finally, in June of 2014, we get our very first set of carcass data to see how those cattle do. And we were average. That's what we were, pretty much industry average. We were doing 89% choice, a little better than 30% certified Angus beef acceptance rate. Didn't have a single one that went prime. But like if you looked at Jim Robb's charts this morning, right, everybody made money that year. So it was a pretty easy thing. Made me look really smart because I got to show my cousins, look how much money we made on this new management style, right? They could have had three legs and blind one eye and still made money. But it was a great first year for us to kind of set out on this journey. We get lucky once in a while. But this was the thing I was thinking of, right? It took us 26 months from the time we decided that we bred those cows to the time we just found out if it kind of worked or didn't work, right? And in the meantime, we'd made two more years of breeding decisions. So if this hadn't worked, I'd have been replicating those bad decisions for those two more years, and we just spent a long time making up for those mistakes. But really didn't know what to do about it. I mean, that's the issue we face in the cattle industry, is that generational lag. But we kept on with that same course. Used a different bull that year, one that scored a lot higher in marbling, and we were excited to see what the difference what that would do. And we were going to basically run that same program again, except our plans got changed when we were introduced to some of the genomic testing that's available. And we decided we'd gene max focus test our steers and just see, you know, maybe there's some, and honestly it was the thing of, you know, we got to fill pots, we got to fill loads to get them down there. So let's find out what our best calves are for sure, and we'll send those down. And maybe there's some cleanup calves that would do all right, and we're leaving some money on the table with them. So we did the Gene Max focus test on the steers that year, right before we were going to ship, actually, and it really changed our understanding of what our cattle were. We had the calves that were out of bull called Progress that were scoring on a scale of 1 to 99, we're averaging almost a 97. Okay, so the test is saying those cattle should do really well in the feedlot, should gain well, should grade well. We had our U.S. premium beef calves, which would have been the same sire group from the year before, scoring an 86. So they're 10 points lower, but we kind of had a known quantity, right? So we said, okay, so they scored an 86. We know the prior year they went 89% choice, 32% CAB. So it sort of gave us this benchmark. And if those are doing that, the ones that are 10 points higher should do even better. And that really gave us the confidence to say, you know what? Let's send all those calves down. Our cleanups were hanging right in there with our U.S. premium beef calves. There's no reason for them to go to the sale barn. We should use this information. This information saying, retain ownership. You're going to be all right. And so that's what we did. We adjusted our marketing plan a little bit on the fly. But we sent all the calves that year and retained ownership on them. Getting that first taste of that genomic data on those cattle was really exciting for us. And we could see how much it influenced or gave us the confidence to make some different marketing decisions. And then right away decided, you know, we want to test our heifers too. Let's see what heifers are out there in our herd that are going to do the best job for us. And so here again, our Progress daughters scored really well on the test, scoring averaging almost an 80. Our U.S. premium beef daughters were quite a bit lower, which was a little surprising, but he was pretty heavy milking bull, and so he gets dinged pretty hard on cow cost on the Gene Max Advantage test that you use on heifers. And so, you know, that was something we realized, and we could kind of use that information as we were interpreting the data. And our cleanups were average. I mean, that's basically what they said. You've got some more average cattle there. Okay? So we don't necessarily just need to call all those U.S. premium beefs, but it gave us an opportunity to say, okay, now we can mate those cattle better. If we're going to breed them, we can have a better understanding of what bull we should use. You know, of course, you always look, what's your high score in heifer, right? There's going to be the matriarch of the herd. So we had one score to 92 that very first year, and we're all excited about her. Get her bred, and then we ultrasound there at the beginning of August, and you run her in. And of course, what happens to a heifer that scores 92? She's open. You're dang right, she's open. Yep. Never fails. So what do you do? I called a couple people up. I said, what do you do with your highest scoring heifer scores in open, right? Well, we bit the bullet and said, you know what? It's bred or dead around here. And so that's old 92 right there. And that's a picture of USDA Prime. She tasted great. Yeah. Well, so, you know, you've got as much as those tests, you get really excited, but you have to still make good marketing decisions, make smart decisions for that. And so we've put quite a bit of reproductive pressure on our heifers. They get one chance with stick AI, one chance with the bull, and that's it. It's really helped us, you know, bring our calving season together and also, you know, just do a better job of making sure we don't have any of those. Our goal, we don't want any of those cattle going back in the herd that are going to lose us money. So being this was the first time we had that GeneMax focus data right on those steers. Now we have actual carcass data to go back, and I was hoping I could prove the test wrong and I'd get my money back from Zoetis, right? Well, our U.S. premium beefs did a little bit better than last year. We had no prime still, but we did a little bit better. We did 47% CAB, 95% choice. And this number here, I've got a standardized grid on a spreadsheet that's very similar to the one that they use at U.S. premium beef, their quality grid. And I can plug the data in there, and it'll spit out a number for me. And so I can take cattle that we kill at different times on different pricing, and we can still compare apples to apples. So on a 140 base, they came back at 140.234. So we basically, grid premiums were $2.34 100 weight. Okay? Now, look what our progress steers did. 10 points higher on that focus test, and look at the difference. 23% prime, 78% CRB or better. Didn't have anything go less than low choice. And look at the value difference in those steers. They're returning $7 a hundred weight more. Put that on a 900 pound carcass weight. There's $60 a head that I got extra in my pocket for doing nothing different. I used a different bull was all. These steers cost me the same to feed. Their mothers eat the same amount. The vaccine costs the same for both of those. This one was just worth more in the end because consumers say, we like prime. We like CAB. We'll pay you more for it. So the focus data accurately predicted what was going to happen with those steers. And I thought that was really interesting. And it obviously gave us an incredible amount of confidence to use that genomic data to make marketing decisions. So we started testing all of our cleanup bulls. We wanted to make sure that we weren't putting any cleanup bulls in there that were counterfeit. Because we could see, you know what, we didn't want to treat our cleanups as kind of that waste product. You know, they're not as good. We'll have to do something different with those. No, we thought we could do pretty well in keeping those up. And so, we've been testing at least all of our bulls are at least two generations of AI calves on the 50K test. And they've scored really well. And it's actually led to a nice, we started selling some bulls off the place that are all coming out of these tested heifers, coming out of tested cows. We've got all this data on them. We're routinely having cattle, this MVPFL, that's a feedlot index where they kind of combine growth traits, carcass traits, spit out a number. And on the global database, we're typically scoring in the top 1% or 2% for scores on that. But this was the cool thing, right? We can test those calves when they're first born. They're baby calves. Boom. Take a tissue sample, send it in, and before we make our breeding decisions that following spring, we can have an idea whether those breeding decisions we made the year before are working. And we can find out what matings are working maybe better than others. And if we need to adjust, we can do that very quickly, and hopefully it prevents us from making a mistake. 26 months to 11 months. I thought that was really incredible. We talked about doing our heifers. We've really started, you know, making sure that we test all those heifers. We've done the GeneMax Advantage on them. We've also used I50K, depending on the year, depending on the pricing of those tests, as those have been changing. But it was showing us a lot of the same things, right? I mean, we have these heifers that are scoring very well against the global database. And then you get down and you look at your cleanups and you say, well, shoot, they only scored a 146. That's You feel pretty bad about that when you look at the ones scoring a 200. But they're still in the top 24% of the database against that entire population. So if we want to market those, we can do that because of all the information. We can say, hey, these heifers are scoring the top 25% of the global database. And so this gives us some marketing ability, too, where heifers that maybe aren't going to fit as well into our herd, but could do a lot towards helping somebody else's. The fun thing is, these open heifers, when we do put quite a bit of reproductive pressure on them, we always kind of used to look at those open heifers as feeling pretty bad about they didn't breed, and man, I sure wish old 92 would have stuck, right? But because we've got all this data, we knew we don't want to just get rid of those open heifers at the sale barn. Those are a valuable resource to us as well. We know those cattle are going to grade. And they did. We were able to take those heifers that were first born in 2015 that we got data off of and finish those off. Well, typically AI heifers, the end of May, bulls out for a cycle. We will pull the bulls 1st of July, ultrasound the 1st of August, and we can have those cattle on feed by the middle of August, and they're finished come December. In fact, ours from this year, the last low we finished out that pen, they left this morning to head to Liberal to the packing plant. But look what those cattle did. I mean, we saw what their steer mates did, but these cattle going 57% prime, 17% CAB. They did all right, right? Gaining 5 pounds a day, or almost 5 pounds a day, converting almost five. That was all right deal. So we've got data here again. We can make good marketing decisions based off the information we have. And these have become a nice, as much as you hope they breed, they've become a nice little profit center for us as well. Essentially, they're getting harvested 5 months later than their steer mates is all. So are we trending? The trend is your friend. Which direction are we going? This has been exciting for us to see. Like we talked about, no primes to begin with, 89% choice or better. Look, as we've traveled through these last 4 years, how much genetic progress we've put into those cattle. To where now we're going 35% prime. This past year, our steers went 82% CAB or better. I highlight that one because that's one of my big goals, is to have cattle going 100% CAB or better. That's where I'd like to get. Because when you're grading CAB or prime, I'm getting a premium for every single pound of that product I make. Every single pound. If they're only going low choice, I've got to meet plant average. I got to beat that threshold. And I don't get paid a premium until I meet that threshold, and then that's everything above that, right? So I have to give away some of that. I have to do better than average before I get that. But every single pound of CAB and prime brings me a premium. You look down on that standardized grid like I've talked about. That first year we were at 144 ultimately. We've moved that up to 151. So we've added $7 a hundredweight to the value of our cattle. And this is comparing apples to apples because we're on that standardized grid. But then you look at that bottom line, standardized grid's all fine and dandy, but that doesn't do me any good when I go to the bank, all right? Tell them, well, it worked really good on my standardized grid. No, they still have to make money. You got to cash the check. So I actually went back this past year, and even though these cattle every year, obviously they're killing on different choice select spreads, different premiums that are in the grid, what was our average premium back per head? Pretty flat those first 2 years, $46, $49. But in 2016, we saw that curve take off. And all of a sudden, 2016, we averaged a $78 head premium for those cattle. And this year, it was almost $100. We've doubled it from when we started. So why was it flat and now it's taking off, that increasing on an increasing level type curve? Well, remember back here, we tested those heifers for the first time. We started making marketing and keeping decisions based off of that. In 2016, we killed some steers out of that first set of heifers that we kept back using that type of information and making those mating decisions. And look what happened. Immediately, with only 1 year's worth of calf crop that they were contributing based off the whole herd, we saw that number go up. And in 2017, we had basically 2 years worth of cows that were contributing calves into those, and we saw it rise up again. To me, that's pretty amazing how much we all think it's really hard. It's really slow to make genetic change in your cow herd. I don't think it is. I think you can make it pretty fast. If you have good technology, you make good decisions based on the best information that you can put together. This is an interesting thing, too, and kind of relating to that, right? So if we have the old cows, which would have been, we'll call those dad's cows, the kind of the end of the last generation, and then we got the young cows that have gone into the system under new management, look at the differences we see and the return that those are giving us, okay? Our old cows, regardless of what they were bred to, kind of $55 a head in standard grid premiums, they're calves, right? Now the young cows jumped up to 73, so they're returning us almost an extra $20 bill. And I will tell you, these cows are cheaper to run than my old cows are because they're not as big. There's back to that progress bullet scored so well. Look what he does when we breed him to our old cows. I mean, just shows what happens when, you know, what a bull can do, obviously. And then what happens when you have the cow and the bull both contributing to your goals, you see that number go up. So we've gone from 55 to essentially 125 if we do our make good breeding decisions. Just kind of a track, our marbling scores from over the years, right? So 400s would be low choice, 500s average choice, 600s now you're in high choice. Our average score this year on our steers was 654. We're averaging high choice. Hot carcass weight, that's a function of the market. It's kind of, Jim talked about that this morning, right? My chart kind of does the same thing his does. We were pulling cattle through this year, through the system, and so we were marketing those cattle a little quicker. But what this graph shows, we don't have to feed them out. We don't have to get them big and fat in order to get them to grade. Genetics are there to grade, whether we're killing them at 800 pounds, 850 pounds, or 900 pounds. Genetics are there to marble. Ribeye area, we haven't followed, you know, that's not something we were initially trying to grow right away, but it has gone up a little bit. Yield grades stayed basically flat through those 4 years. I was told when I started on this, I had a guy tell me, he said, oh, you're gonna get a bunch of yield grade fours and fives if you're out there chasing marbling. Data tells a different story. There again, that's that price per hundredweight that we're seeing for our calves if you do it on a standardized grid, so you can compare year over year. That's a pretty good trend if you want to look at the value of what your cattle are doing. Those are those average grid premiums again. So, you know, what was the challenges you faced? I have a lot of people say, what did you give up? You know, what did you have to give up to get this? I say, well, I gave up commodity prices. That was kind of nice. Wasn't sad to give those up. But it wasn't easy. I mean, we had to convince ourselves, myself. I had to convince myself, my family, that we could make this change. We had to do our homework. We had to figure out, when you're collecting all this genomic data, how do you manage all that information? How do you keep track of it? Where are we going to feed them? We had never retained ownership before. We got to find a feedlot. We got to find a broker to help us. We're going to own these cattle a lot longer now. So how do we protect ourselves financially since we're going to own them longer? How do we reduce that risk? Just lots of things there. Genetics versus environment. I'll tell you a quick story about that. Well, that first year we tested those heifers, and I was going through the pen and looking at my sheets, and I had all these heifers that scored pretty well, and there was one heifer I couldn't find. She scored well, and I'm looking and looking and looking, and finally I found her, and she's one of them little dinks over in the corner that I'd looked past her several times. And she'd scored really well on the test. And I thought, what the world's going on here? This test must not be any good. So, of course, you get out your book, and you start looking up. Yeah, that calf's mother had died shortly after we'd gone to grass, and basically that calf had been an orphan all summer, right? Out there robbing, trying to stay alive. And so there was your genetics environment. That heifer had the genetic potential to do really well. The problem was her environment didn't allow her to express those genetics. And because of that, was never going to reach her potential. So you have to always remember that when you're looking at these kinds of things. Where do we go from here? We talked about, it's been a lot of fun. We've been starting to do a lot of genetic consulting with some of our bull customers that are now doing genetic testing, helping them analyze their data, looking at their data and what genetics that we have that can really complement them, working with them to figure out how to retain ownership. That's been a really fun thing to do because it isn't easy. And I didn't do it on my own when I had to find out. I wasn't just blessed with all this information in my head. I had to go out and ask a lot of questions, and I had a lot of people that answered those questions for me and helped me along. And so it was very nice that they were able to do that, help me. And I'm trying to pass that along to some of our customers as well. And it's been a really fun journey for them to get carcass data back for the first time, see how much, you know, their world gets so much bigger because all of a sudden they feel like they've got options. You're not just kind of a victim of the market. Now you can create a market. You can create cattle that demand more money. So we've talked about at what point do we use embryo transfer on commercial cows? I mean, we've got a lot of data on them. If I got a cow out there that every year she's giving me a prime steer, boy, I'd like to have 50 more of her in the herd, right? Might not be a bad idea. Those are all things we have to consider that probably a lot of times we don't even think about. But we've tried to never look at anything anymore and say, oh, that would never work, or oh, that can't possibly be. We look at everything, I guess, with pretty open eyes, and until we can prove to ourselves that it won't work, we'll consider a lot of those types of things. So that's been a lot of fun as we continue to grow. When we set off on this path in 2012 and we were going to first AI those cows, I thought it'd take us 10 to 15 years to probably get where we were going to be. And we've basically gotten there in 4 or 5 now. And to me, that's pretty amazing. It's not because we've got some magical sauce in the back room. We don't sprinkle any pixie dust on our cows to make this happen. We're just using the tools that are available to every one of us in this room and trying to make our cattle more valuable so we can hopefully pass it on to the sixth generation. So a lot of folks on that list that I consider ranch management partners that we rely on a lot to help make good decisions. And if you don't have a ranch management team, kind of a list like this, I'd really encourage you to find those folks, because I ask a lot of questions and I've learned a lot from people that are a lot smarter than me. And I think everyone's probably, it's a good thing to do. So with that, I don't know if I'm on time. Are we going? We're right on time. So it's been a really fun journey for us, I would say. And we always enjoy talking cattle on our end of the phone. So if you ever have any questions or you want to visit with us, why, please don't hesitate to get in contact. And we'd love to visit more with you. So thank you for letting me share our data on our ranch.